Over the past decade or so, Rhonda Weber would give an update about Assurance. And boy, we have really been praying for some good leadership to finally come to Assurance. And now we have it with Randy, and he's here this morning. Of course, that is a joke. So if you don't know, Rhonda, who's the director of our women's ministry here, was the longtime director at Assurance. And she transitioned to the church last year, and now Randy is here. And I want you to give us an update, but let us get to know you a little bit and your story and all of that. So come on up, bro. I'm going to pray for you and then hand you the mic. And just so grateful for you, your life, your ministry, and God's providence in your life to have you here. So let me pray, and I'll hand you the mic. Oh, Father, we thank you for Assurance. Oh, Lord, we long for the day when Assurance is there in such a manner in which we hear one good story after another after another. We pray, oh God, for this ministry. Father, they are on the direct line of fight against our enemy. They need you. They need your protection every single day. Thank you for Rhonda and her life and ministry and Assurance the last decade. Thank you for their board, their staff. And Father, thank you for raising Randy to bringing him here in such a unique way. Lord, bless him and bless the ministry. Thank you. In Christ's name, amen.
Thanks, man. Good morning. How's everybody doing today? So I just want to say, so when I was in seminary, I don't know, 15 or so years ago, we had a scholar come through. He took a position. He's a New Testament scholar. He had written this 4,000-page commentary on Acts. I mean, 4,000 pages, no footnotes, anything like that. In fact, it was so full that he had to put the footnotes on a bibliography, right? So he ends up coming to, I attend a Vineyard church over in Wilmore, and he ends up coming to our church the same Sunday that our pastor decides he's going to start preaching through Acts. And it was really funny because, you know, we're maybe a 200-person church, and this guy's written this the magnum opus, right, on the Acts commentary. And I remember our pastor saying something about, he said, well, I got to this place in the middle of the sermon, and I said something about Herod, but I said the wrong Herod. And all of a sudden, I look out across the congregation, and I see this scholar's guy, his head is, like, leaning down, and all of a sudden, he shoots up like this. And all of a sudden, he was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Well, maybe I got the wrong Herod. It could have been this Herod. It could have been, you know. And he all of a sudden realized, he was like, I should not be preaching through Acts with this. So with Rhonda Weber having 9 years in the role of Assurance, if I see Rhonda's head go up like this, you'll know I might get a little fumbled here. But I just want to say thank you guys for having me be here. And I would say two things before I just get up and kind of share a little bit about the work that we do and a little bit about the why that we do. And the first thing that I point out, which probably needs a little bit more explicit pointing out nowadays, is that I am clearly not a woman. So that question is, it's always an eyebrow raiser. Like, why is somebody stepping into this role working in the pregnancy center world that is not a woman? I'm going to share a little bit about that with you guys here, too. The second thing that I always say is that this is a complex topic. And so, you know, depending on where you are, I meet people all the time in churches that say, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, I walked this road, right? And so, like, I'm here to say, number one, like, you guys know what freedom is, right? You hear that every single Sunday. You know what redemption is. You know what restoration is. And so Assurance is not one of the pregnancy resource centers that's like fits in with the stereotypes that sometimes you see about condemnation and so forth, right? It is a place, I say this full-heartedly, that it is a place for healing. It is a place for restoration. It is a place for redemption. And so whatever your experience is with this issue, whether you have walked through this road yourself, whether you're a male who's walked alongside this road with somebody yourself, whether you are a grandparent who has walked this with a granddaughter, whether it's somebody that you've walked with within your work or your neighbors or anything like that, this is one of those issues that so many people are touched with and affected with. Like, remember, like, this, the reason we do this in the church, right, is because this exudes out of our theology of redemption and restoration. And so really, really, really important not to forget that. So I'm going to tell you, I kind of want to break this up into like three different segments. And the first is I'm going to kind of walk you through a little bit about why I, as a male, came into this role and how this kind of plays into my own story. And it kind of goes into a little bit of, you know, I'm a male. I really believe men should be very more involved in this than they currently are, right? And this culture kind of gives them space to be. And we have to share a little bit about my story, and then I'll share a little bit about kind of assurance and what assurance is and some updates and share a little bit about some of our programs. And then I want to take like the last few minutes or so and just be here for some questions, because I'd really appreciate when people can say, you know, I've had this question about the work of assurance, or I've had this question about a pregnancy resource center, or I have this question about what's going on kind of in the region or, you know, geographically or politically or anything like that. So this was not the thing that I thought that I was going to ever do, right? I say God is not a fan of stereotypes, and it's really funny because my wife is a coffee roaster and runs a coffee company, and I run a pregnancy resource center. So, again, God takes people in very different directions in life, and that's okay, right? We want God to kind of surprise us in our journeys and surprise us with where we're going. I ended up falling into this issue. I've always been somebody who is pro-life intellectually. In fact, my intro to the pro-life work was through culture and through apologetics. I had a good friend when I was working at Summit Ministries. His name was Scott Klusendorf, who was a mentor to me in the area of the pro-life world. And I came into this from that direction, from being an apologist. And when I went to seminary, I thought that I was going to be a biblical scholar. God changed paths there, but I also came into it from an angle of the early church and the New Testament. In fact, one of the most formative books I've ever read, I don't know if you read this, but it's by a guy named Michael Gorman, who's a New Testament scholar, called The Early Church and Abortion. And I, as a young male going through seminary, I'm just really, you know, this is one of those issues that really has resonated with me, but I really want to know not what our current church says about it, not what the Western church says about it, not what our contemporary world says about it, but what the whole scope of the church says about it, right? Sometimes you'll hear people say things like, well, the Bible doesn't really talk about abortion. The Bible doesn't really talk about, you know, this kind of stuff. It doesn't really define what a human person is. It doesn't really define when life is, right? And so going back to the history of the church is really, really important. Now, we live in a culture, we live in a church culture, and I think this is not the case with TCPC, but so many churches kind of put this dividing line between tradition and honoring the tradition and looking back at tradition for now and whatever is going on now culturally. And that could be a really big rabbit hole where people can get lost in, because it's about what's happening now and the future rather than how have we dealt with these questions for thousands of years. And I want to say this, like, the abortion issue is not a contemporary issue. It's been happening for thousands and thousands and thousands, probably tens of thousands of years, right? Rome, this was a major practice in Rome. In fact, in Jesus's day, Rome, from all the data and stuff like that we can see, during Jesus's day, abortion hit an all-time high. And abortion was very linked with infanticide, where they would take children and leave them out in the cold if they didn't want them or if they were deformed. And those two practices were basically one and the same. So the early church really had a lot to say about abortion, and it condemned it explicitly from the very beginning. In fact, in the Didache, which is the apostles' teaching, comes from the first century, it explicitly says the church does not commit infanticide and it does not commit abortion, right? So look, that was another introduction for me, right? But all of that was like right up here. It was all cognitive, it was thought. You know, there was a time where I thought I wanted to do my PhD on this and kind of like reamped some of the scholarship around this. And so I go through my first year of seminary, and then I move to Wilmore. And I moved to Wilmore from a big city in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I don't know, how many of you guys have been down to Wilmore before, right? It's a small kind of itty-bitty town. I drove in and said, oh God, get me out of here. I don't want to be here any longer than I need to be here. 6 months, that was my plan. I was going to take my residency classes and do the rest online. I was going to go out to Colorado, or I was going to go to Asheville, North Carolina. And again, God takes us through different journeys, things that we don't expect. My second day in Wilmore, I went to a seminary back-to-school party. Right? Now, I went to a state school, so I'm sitting here thinking, this is going to be the lamest party I've ever been a part of. What does a seminary back-to-school party look like, right? And so I went, and, you know, I'm a very kind of cultural-y kind of guy in a sense. Like, I, you know, But I went and I hung around and I ended up sitting around a fire pit kind of waiting for the party to end. And I had a girl come and she sat next to me. And it was an immediate thing where I was like, oh, you're kind of like me. And she was like, yeah, I didn't want to go to this party either. So we talked for about an hour and a half. And it was a great conversation. I still remember the conversation, still remember what she was wearing, all this kind of stuff. Well, ended up, she left. I could not find her for a long time. Could not find her. Now, the seminary community is only about 500 people large, so it's not that big. So I was banking on the fact that, well, we'll have some classes together or something like that. I'll find this person. Could not, 3 weeks later, I still couldn't find this person. I ended up going to the church that I still go to now, about 3 weeks in, and saw this person there again. And we sat down, and we were having a conversation. I was like, I'm not going to let this one go at this point. So we're having a conversation afterwards, and she says, well, if you want to get to know me, you're going to have to get to know my son. If you want to get to know me, you're going to have to get to know my son. And like that, if anybody's walked that road before, like, you know, like your stomach drops at that point. You're like, oh, there's real implications here. There's real implications here. Well, I wanted to get to know her, right? So we had a first study date and stuff like that. And then the second time, I still remember the first days that I saw my son walking down the steps. And he was about 1 year old. And actually, I think he fell down the steps, which is not atypical of him if you ever meet him before. But, you know, we hit it off. And a year plus later, I ended up picking him up in my arms as we were walking down the aisle. And I adopted him about 6 months later. Great story, right? We had a daughter about another year later. Her name is Lily. And my wife had walked through, I mean, the reason she had a son is because she had walked through an unplanned pregnancy. She had come back to Wilmore after living in Colorado, where she had kind of run from God. And ultimately, is what she told me, she said, I left because I realized that as soon as I got pregnant, I realized that either I was going to wind up dead, or he was going to wind up dead, or we were both going to wind up dead. She had gotten raised in a Christian home with a very pro-life foundation, and she knew the moment that she had conceived that she wasn't going to choose to abort, even though she had every reason in the world to choose to abort. She had a career in front of her. She was single. She wasn't in a good relationship. She didn't have a stable job, right? She was away from all of her stability and stuff like that. She had every reason in the world. Plus, his biological father was pushing for abortion, said, I don't want to be a dad right now. Go ahead and abort. But she had a firm foundation for what this looked like. And she knew that she couldn't choose that road, but she also knew that in choosing the road of life, she was going to be choosing that road of difficulty. And so she ended up coming back to Wilmore. She ended up living with her parents. She ended up doing a mental health degree. And she was like, I have walked this road. I want to help other people walk this road. And so my first encounter with Assurance was with my wife, Bethany, who ended up taking a job with Assurance. She took actually it was like a practicum role with Assurance. And so she was working with women, counseling women that were in this exact same situation that she was in. In fact, my first picture of my daughter comes from an ultrasound. I wish I brought it today, but it's an ultrasound that says Assurance. And she's like itty bitty small, right? She, after about a year, she went to go work at Avenues for Women, which is another pregnancy resource center up in Frankfort, Kentucky. And on May 13th, 2013, she passed away in a car accident on the way to work. And my life went like that, completely upside down. And my faith dropped out from under me completely. And I remember months later sitting on the floor with my daughter with my middle finger in the air and saying, Lily, I do not believe in God. I do not believe in God. I mean, I'm double trained in seminary, double master's degree. I had a philosophy degree. I was an apologist trained in worldview. And here I am telling my six-month-old daughter that I do not believe in God anymore. I always say I'm a big C.S. Lewis guy. And there's a big difference between the problem of pain and a grief observed. Two very different issues, right? And that's one of those areas when it comes to the work that we do, a lot of people can be pro-life intellectually, they can have that foundation, but when the experience hits, that's a very different conversation that people are having. So the experience and the thought behind it are very different. And for me, my journey there was very different. Intellectually, I had all the reasons to believe in God in the midst of pain. And then in the experience of it, I had none of the reasons to believe in God. So I told God, I said, God, if you want me, you need to come find me. You need to come find me in a way that I can't chalk up to human goodness, and I can't chalk up to coincidence, because you know me. I'm a smart guy. You know, you've created this apologist in me. I have all these reasons why. It ended up being about 6 months after I graduated from seminary, we were looking for a home, and I ended up going through all the houses in Wilmore looking for a place to raise my kids, because I knew I wasn't going to go off to Colorado or Asheville or anything like that anymore. And so I needed to raise my kids, both different genders, so they needed separate rooms. We didn't know how long we were going to be here. Went through every single house in Wilmore, and my realtor finally comes to me, and she says, there isn't a place. It's not within your budget, or it's too small, you know. And I just said, well, I don't know what we're going to do. Well, about a day later, she calls me, and she says, well, there's a house going on the market tomorrow. We didn't expect it to go on the market, but it is going on the market. Would you like to come see it? So I went and checked out the house. And it was within our budget, and it was just the right size, not a big house, not a small house, but it was the size for a single dad with two kids and a whole seminary library. You know what that's like if you've walked in his office. All right, you got to take that home with you at some point. And so I said, yeah, we'll put in an offer. I come back to meet with a friend later on in the day, and he said, you've been there before. And I said, I've never been to that house before. And he said, yeah, you have. He says, because you and I met. You and I met on that house. We met the second day that you moved into Wilmore. You met at the school party. We had a back-to-school party at this very house. And all of a sudden, my mind just goes a million miles an hour to the realization that God put me in the same house that I had met Bethany at. And it doesn't answer all the questions. But what it does say is that in the midst of the difficult experiences, in the midst of the valleys in life, God is there. You have to be there. You have to be open to it. You have to say, God, if you want me, come and find me. And that is ultimately our hope with assurance. Is we see so many people in the same, you know, I was in a very different kind of panic situation, but we see so many people in panic situations that say, my whole life just did this, and I don't know where God is in the midst of this. And our greatest hope is to point people and say, if you can ask God to chase you down, I promise you, he's going to chase you down. I told my friend Scott, after that experience, I said, God, Scott, I think God will call me into the same kind of work that he called Bethany into. I said, I don't know when, I don't know how, I don't know what that's going to look like. And lo and behold, TCPC takes Rondo away, and they call me. And I was working in hospice at end of life, and they call, and they ask if I would apply for the position. And I said, yes. And then they tell me that Scott Klusendorf, who was my mentor in this area, that he would be the banquet speaker. And so for me, there just kept being these exclamation points. And I was like, you know what? All right, God, like, I'll take this role, right? We need more people, men in particular, in this fight. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that I will point out is, like, you know, our clients, and this particularly under Rhonda, this grew so much that with our men's director, now 25% of the men that are involved in assurance are men, and they're walking through this program, and they're working with people that are coming in, their spouses, their girlfriends, their significant others, things like that, and they really have that kind of pull and influence, that the equal but opposite influence that, for example, my biological son's father had to push for abortion. These people all of a sudden are like, yeah, actually, I can get behind this. I can make this happen. And it's about empowering men, and it's about empowering women, and it's about empowering families to make decisions for life. And so for me, I come to this issue as somebody who walked through this not as a woman, but as through a male who said, I think I can do this. I think I can raise a kid. I think I can do this. And without that experience, I wouldn't even have two other kids. Now, God restores the years that the locusts eat away, as Joel says. And I have a beautiful wife. Her name is April. I have a beautiful son who just turned 6 years old. My oldest now is 14, going on 15, going on 3. And so, and it's just a wonderful, what we call a ragamuffin story, because our whole family has a different biological parent across the spectrum. And that's a beautiful story. I mean, we need more people in the church that are into this kind of stuff and into adoptions, into creative families. Not, you know, nuclear families are great, but we need more people celebrating the diversity that family is not first and foremost biological. Family is first and foremost God ordained, right? And however that happens, whether that's through an unplanned pregnancy, which, by the way, Jesus was a crisis pregnancy child, right? And Mary, and there was abortion at that time, and she had every reason in the world to move forward with the cultural decision. And yet she felt the pull and the need and the command and the love of God to say, this is a life that is given to me. I'm responsible for caring for it. So abortion, let me go a different direction with this. So that's kind of the first part. That's how I got plugged in here with Assurance. Assurance, how many of you guys are like super familiar with Assurance with here, right? That's not typically the case when I go meet with churches, frequently with churches. There's a small handful of people that you guys are probably the best represented for good reason. But Assurance has been around for close to 40 years. It's entering its 40th year as what I call the local grassroots response to the abortion movement, right, to the abortion push. And thankfully, about 40 years ago, a small group of Lexington women got together and said, you know what, like, we need to be serving people in this area. We need to be serving people in this situation. And so they formed what was called at the time, Women for Life, and then it's gone through a couple other name changes through the course of its history. And within the past, you know, decade plus or so, it became Assurance for Life or Assurance Care or Assurance Women's Clinic. And it is operated as the oldest pregnancy resource center, formerly called Crisis Pregnancy Centers, in the Lexington area, and I believe in Kentucky as a whole. So for the past 40 years, it has operated, seeing hundreds, if not thousands, of clients every single year who find themselves, people like my late wife, who walked through, who all of a sudden find themselves pregnant, find themselves in a panic situation and wonder, what could I do? I describe Assurance in this way. Assurance is the place where, when somebody is in panic, who finds themselves pregnant, they can come and they can breathe. They can come and they can breathe, and they can make a reflective decision that ultimately they can feel okay with. And we believe, kind of presuppositionally, but we believe that ultimately that decision is life. That decision is life. And the stories that we hear from people that have been through our doors, maybe they've been through our doors 10 or 20 years ago, and they'll say, well, I came to see you guys, and I moved forward with an abortion, but now I'm back here because I realized that I never actually really walked through that well. I realized that I made a mistake. I realized that I did something that I shouldn't have done, and now I want to walk through this, you know, in a healing way, in a restorative way, is really, again, a testimony to the legacy and the work that Assurance has provided over 40 years to be a place where people in the midst of panic or in the midst of turmoil can come and they can find peace and they can find rest. Now, we do this in very practical ways, right? So that's a very nebulous way of saying that, but we do this in very practical ways and really through a couple areas. Number one, we are a specialized medical clinic, which means we're actually really about providing medical services. So when people come and they find themselves unexpectedly pregnant, they can come and they can get a clinical grade pregnancy test. And so sometimes the home test gives us false negatives. Sometimes you need a little bit more. I've seen that journey happen with people who have called in and said, I'm pregnant, and they come in and they find themselves not pregnant. And then we find other ways that we get to love on them, right? One of my favorite stories was here a couple months ago. We had a lady call through our telecare system, and she was very abortion-minded. She said, I had a son. He's about a year and a half old. I don't know that I can do this again. She came in. She was very obstinate and frustrated. She said, I took a pregnancy test at home, and I'm positive. Well, she came in, and she was negative, right? Okay, great. But she brought in her one-and-a-half-year-old son, who is the reason, you know, she's like, this is the reason why I can't have one. Man. Like, when she told us about her economic situation and her social situation and some of the challenges that she was to get, what did we get the chance to do is to love on her other child, right? And turn this whole story around where she was frustrated, she was up, you know, we thought we were going to have a situation on our hands, and we ended up getting the chance to love on her other child, right? And however that plays out in her life, only God knows. But the point is that God brings in people from different areas. So medical services, by providing limited obstetric ultrasounds through clinical pregnancy testing, through, you know, making sure that the child is growing in a viable pregnancy, stuff like that, making referrals and stuff like that towards other medical professionals if you need further, further care, and people typically need further care there. We provide emotional services, and this is what we call advocacy. And so this is kind of counseling, right? So walking people through all the highs and the emotions of what an unplanned pregnancy is like. And there are a lot of those emotions. We see people all over the spectrum. In fact, we have really three different demographics of people that we see. We see those that are coming in and they're like, I have a firm foundation. I found myself with a pregnancy, but I know what I'm going to choose, right? So they're going to choose life. Then we have people that are kind of in a vulnerable category. And those are people sometimes that are like, well, I'm going to choose life, but I really don't know how to get there. We walk with them through that process. Sometimes we don't actually know what people are going to choose, even if they say, I'm going to choose life. That doesn't always mean that that's actually true. You know, we have stories where people say, yeah, I'm going to choose life. And when we do follow up with them, we find out that for some reason or another, they decided to choose an abortion, right? And then we have, and this is our mission field, abortion-minded people. This is one of the reasons why you don't see big signs, billboard signs and stuff like that on the side of the road that say, assurance for life, you know? Because our hope is to really be a place where people who are like, I'm really deep in the hole. I'm really deep in the panic area. I'm really deep in the what do I do here stage. But I hear all these other voices, these cultural voices, the legal voice. You see this all the way from the top down, right, that say, you know what, if you got a problem, here's an easy way to fix this, right? And that is our mission field. And I will say one of the beautiful legacies of assurance is that as we walk people through the journey, and like I say, assurance is that place where if people are in panic, they can come and they can breathe and they can make a decision that they're good with, right, that they feel peace about, and we believe that that decision is life. Over the 40 years of assurance, and by its most conservative metric, over 5,100 children have been saved from abortion because we put that process in play. Walking people through the entire process, walking people through the entire pregnancy. This past year, and again, these are conservative metrics, this past year was about 109 projected lives saved. And that's about one for every 3 days in the calendar year, right? We always lose some, right? There are always people that when we call, you know, they either don't pick up the phone, we don't know what happened. There's some people that we call, and, you know, we find out what happened. A couple months ago, we placed a call, and she didn't respond, but then she texted back and just said the baby is dead. You know, sometimes we hear the really sad stories. But then we're there for the aftermath. And Anna, who's sitting right here, has been a part of our Renew training, which is all about helping people walk through the aftermath of an abortion, because we know that at some point, whether that's months, years, or even decades later, that many people will come in and say, I did something that I'm not particularly healed from, that I need more, right? And so we want to walk with them through that. There's other areas that we serve. One is an STI clinic, that's a free STI clinic that operates since we're right across from UK. That's very popular, but it's a great way to reach out to people. Number one, just to do something good and just to put a seed in the hearts and the minds of people, right, that are very sexually active or sexually active or you know, whatever their story is, we get the chance to love on them and serve on them, but we also get the chance to enter into their lives. And I'll say things like our post-abortive care program, our Renew program, our first client as we've relaunched that program came through our STI clinic. And we hear about people all the time that come in and they'll talk about their health history and through our nurses and so forth, they'll sit down and they'll talk with them for half an hour to an hour about where they are on their life, where they are in their journey. And some of the things that you hear that come out of that are just amazing stories, incredible stories and opportunities to love. Right? We run a REACH program. Our REACH program is a parenting class program for couples that are choosing life. And so as they do that, they can get some assistance along the way, but also a lot of parenting skills. And how many of you guys are parents in here, right? Like, or have been, you know? we don't know what we're doing at all, right, most of the time. And to have somebody, when you all of a sudden this is thrown on you, and I, again, will say this is somebody who stepped into the dad role really quick, you know, you don't know what you're doing. In fact, I still look back, and I'm like, man, I was a big dummy. Man, I would have loved to have somebody come alongside me and say, let me teach you some skills, you know, because you got thrown into this. You didn't have years to prepare for this. You just got thrown into this. And so that's what the intent of our REACH program is, to be a place for couples who are thrown into this all of a sudden to really kind of start off with like some resources and some help and so forth, right? And so that's that. And then we have our bridge program. Katie Kelly, I believe, also goes here too, and she's our bridge coordinator. So she, this is one of the areas where I think Pregnancy Resource Centers Assurance really can serve as a model for other pregnancy resource centers. The number one concern, the number one complaint that people have about pregnancy resource centers is that they care for the baby, but they don't care for the person that's carrying the baby. And so our bridge program, like the name itself, is really designed to say, hey, listen, if you are needing, and most of you are needing support in terms of social support, community support, you need housing, you need health insurance, you need jobs, you need job leads, all that kind of stuff, right? Child care, transportation, we're going to connect you with the resources for that to happen. As we often say in our clinic, we say there are more than one clients in a room. There's always more than one client in a room. There are two, sometimes there's three, you know, clients in a room, and we get to serve all of those clients in all of these kind of ways, right? This is, Assurance is the boots on the ground response of the pro-life movement. And I will say this, this issue of the abortion issue has been so up here for so many years that I'm really glad that there's starting to be a swing to say, well, what is the local expression of this look like? We've been talking about this for decades at a very high political level and a nationalistic level, and there's a lot of emotions around that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying that there's not a place for that kind of stuff, but oftentimes that's where people's eyes go, rather than the boots on the ground, the local client-to-client, person-to-person work that happens. And that is where the most effective change happens. I promise you, out of the 40 years to take more than 5,100 Lexington lives at its most conservative metric and say that those lives have been saved and the lives that have carried them have been changed through this, man, that's the change. That's the change. And it's just like anything else, whether it's addiction recovery or whether that's refugee work, right? Or whether that's homelessness work, right? We can sometimes be distracted by the optics of the big macro level stuff where we fight. But here at the local stuff is usually where most people can say, yeah, we can work together. In fact, I will say this, that I do think about 95-96% of good-hearted people, wherever they stand on this issue, would agree with the statement that if you find yourself unexpectedly pregnant, you should probably take some time and breathe and reflect on that before you make a decision on what to do. That's just wisdom, right? Is to breathe through panic, right? Is to make a reflective decision in the midst of panic rather than a rushed decision out of panic. And so I think that there's far more opportunity to collaborate and work together across interests, right? Across whatever people feel in the case-by-case issues, irrespective of whatever the big stuff is. So that's a little bit about Assurance. That's a little bit about how I got plugged in here. But like I said, one of the things that I really like coming to these kind of things for is the opportunity to answer questions and maybe ask some questions myself. But I think we can open it up for 10 minutes or so.
Any questions for Randy? Yes.
No, it's not with us. We're not a hospital. Yeah, it's a pregnancy resource center. We're there for like the initial kind of unplanned, I don't know what to do stage of all of this. So our referrals and stuff like that will go outward. So a lot of people will come in and they'll have that question. I've not walked this road before. I'd be a first-time parent. I don't exactly know. And our nurses are really good about being able to point people in the right direction to say, you know, here's some care that's going to be here for your whole journey. You know, we don't provide, you know, continuum of care along that way. So again, I've never walked that journey myself as a woman to go through the whole 9 months of what a pregnancy is like. But I do know my wives have made multiple trips to multiple doctors for that whole process, right? And so our nurses are really good about plugging people in with the right kind of people to walk that journey with them. Yeah, actionable items. You know, we're one of the things as a local agency, we're working on trying to kind of develop more of that kind of stuff. Because again, that's not particularly where the response has been for the past several decades, right? We have, that's probably our number one request is, how can I volunteer, right? And sometimes we have difficult places to put volunteers in. Sometimes that's in, you know, hey, if you're passionate about parenting and you walk this journey, we would love to plug you in with like some couples that needs a mentor along these areas. One of the areas where we're kind of stewing on at this point is like, especially in relation to our social services arm, our Bridge program, is like, if you have a certain set of skills, we want to connect with you. And I'll give you a story here. We had a client come through. This is, I was probably only about in this role maybe 2 months or so before we had a client come through who was a refugee in the area, and she didn't come through the natural routes. But she's sitting here and she's like, I'm not legal. If I have this child, I go to a hospital, they're going to send me back home. And they're going to separate me from my child. And so she was like, I want to choose life, but I don't want to be separated from my child. And I thought in that moment, like, man, I really want an immigration attorney, you know? If there's somebody in the church that is like, hey, I really work with this demographic, and some of this is like when you have certain people that have a certain set of skills, right? It sounds like a spy, right? But a certain set of skills, but that also are committed to the pro-life push, they understand the time crunch that's here. Because we could say, well, here, just go this route, right? But what we know is that this person is walking on a timetable, a time crunch, and they're saying, well, I only got so long before I'm either forced to kind of carry this child or I can procure abortion at like an earlier stage or something like that. And so trying to kind of get them with that time crunch and understand that that's a big, big, big factor, months is not going to work. We need people that are going to kind of be pushers and shovers within days to weeks. So that's one of those areas. I will say one of the biggest areas right now is just, you know, pregnancy resource centers are 100% funded through donations and through donors. So we can't really apply for federal grants. That puts us on a dangerous path, you know, for a lot of reasons. If we were trying to go into chase after this or that and things, and we've seen stories of pregnancy centers that have done that kind of stuff, and you know, they get chased after by, you know, certain groups and stuff like that, and sometimes even shut down, right? We want to do things absolutely always above reproach, but we also want to do things very smartly, right? And so with wisdom. And so, you know, pregnancy resource centers were 100% funded through donors and through grants, and so that's one of the easiest ways. So you guys have those little baby bottles, and we say put in coins, put in, you know, checks, put in, you know, dollar bills, put in cryptocurrency. Yeah, that's where I was going with that, Bitcoin. I don't know how that would fit and work in there, but, you know, that kind of stuff really keeps our doors open and has kept our doors open for 40 years. So that's a really big area to help out. But all that to say, like, over the next 10 years, I think a lot of those opportunities are going to change and they're going to open up, because I do think, you know, culture is changing here. We need more in terms of strategic partnerships with individuals rather than kind of just, you know, traditional models. Yeah, baby bottles.
If you have more questions, obviously you can contact us. You can contact Randy or Rhonda. But I just want you to hear, we love you. We stand with you. We'll do all that we can with baby bottles and any other dollar we can come across. We'll send it your way. I used to be on the assurance board. The goal is not just for them to survive financially. They need a lot of money. to thrive. It just is what it is. So pray, give accordingly, but we're with you, man. We're grateful for you. Our sermon this morning is about God's providence and how the Lord does things you could have never imagined. Man, your life, you're doing things you could have never imagined, and the Lord is with you. So, Rhonda, I'm going to have you come and pray, and I'm going to get ready for the second service. But thank you for coming, Randy.
I asked him if I could pray for you.
Yes.
I was wondering what your eyes were. I know. I was like trying to get his eyes. Yes, great job. I was not looking up in reaction to anything you said. Okay, the service is about to start, but I just want to pray for you. Lord, I thank you for Randy. I am one of the few people who know the privilege and also the weight of what you have called him to. And you have raised him up for just the time of this. And I am so excited about the vision you are giving him and the wisdom you are giving him and the guidance you are giving him so that this ministry can continue to thrive. Please protect him and all those who work there, our members who work there, and everyone else, Lord, mind, body, and spirit. Would your hand of favor and protection be upon them? Lord, would you use them to save and change many, many lives for your glory? In Jesus' name, amen.